Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, our friend Daniel Wallace is known on the Carolina campus as a great writing teacher. But around the country, folks are still talking about his book, Big Fish, but you remember that, and then also the movie that it inspired. But the big news is, it's going to Broadway. I didn't know that. And Daniel Wallace,
yeah,
thank goodness, Laura, your wife, told me, and I went crazy. And you agreed to come tell us about what you're doing, but can you tell us what you will about the upcoming The Big Fish, Big Fish the Musical?
First of all, DG, we weren't keeping it a secret from you, I promise.
Yes, you were, too.
No,
I mean, I'm the last to know.
We really wanted you to know about it. The reason that we haven't talked about it before is that only now is it really becoming to seem the real deal. I mean, it's been something that's been in the works for a really, really long time. And these musicals are very difficult to get off the ground. They cost a lot of money, and you've got to get a lot of people together to make them happen. So who knew? My philosophy is hasn't happened until you're in the audience eating your popcorn, watching it. So I never count any chickens. I don't count any eggs. I don't think there's anything there until it actually happens. But this seems really real.
This is getting close.
It's going to happen. The rehearsals have begun in New York. They're going to be rehearsing there for a month, and then the show is going to actually be staged for the month of April in Chicago at the Oriental Theater in Chicago. So
it's already scheduled on stage in Chicago for the pre-Broadway.
Exactly.
And rehearsals going on as we speak. Is that already?
Yes. And in fact, yeah. I mean, I have no idea how they do it. It's going to be an incredible amount of work for them to get everything together in time. But this is how they do it. I guess they work around the clock making this happen. But last week they started rehearsals. Laura and I went up to be there for the sort of the introductions, where everybody associated with the productions says hi and, you know, break a leg and let's get going. And so they started there, and they're going to be doing that at studios on 42nd Street, actually, for the next month. And they'll be building the sets. Then the sets will be transferred up to Chicago, and they'll put the show on there. So that'll go, I think, from April 2nd to May 5th. And then there'll be a hiatus for the summer. And then in September 5th, it's going to open up in the Neil Simon Theater in New York.
Yeah, well, you talked about expense. So they've got the actors, actresses, singers, choruses, props. They've got all these people in line. They're paying them.
Absolutely.
And then they're going to give them a vacation, or do they pay them and work on the things?
On the musical
during the summer.
During the summer. Many of the people who are associated with it won't have as much of a part in it because their job will have already been done. You know, I have no idea how many, if they're going to have to continue to work on the staging or the costumes. I'm assuming that a lot of the story work will have to be reworked, you know, to find out what works with an audience, what doesn't work with an audience, you know, what songs work. They may have to write a new song. You never know. So it's a really long process that happens prior to Broadway.
Well, you hear, Daniel Wallace, so many stories about authors whose books have been made into movies, and in rare occasions on the Broadway productions, and the it's not uniformly a happy experience. Mm-hmm. You seem to be pretty cheerful about it. What's the difference?
Well, what's not to be happy about, really? I wrote a book, and that was my real contribution to this whole effort. The book, no matter what happens with the movie or a musical or a, you know, a hot dog stand, whatever they decided to do with it, the book doesn't change. The book stays the same forever. Anybody who goes to see a movie based on a book or a musical or what have you, whatever they see is, as much as it's derived from a book, it's not the book. So they can always go back to the book and see what it was, you know, the original idea really was. So that never changes. That's always there. That's always there for somebody to look at. And regardless of how great the movie was or the musical will be, and I everything they've done with it, I've really enjoyed and loved. It all comes back to the book for me. And I don't have anything really to do with these productions as far as direction or suggestion. I don't really want to. But it's the people, really, I think. That's the experience that some writers have, is the people that they have to deal with in getting a movie made are really unpleasant sometimes. And they'll take their book away and say, you know, you're done. We don't need you here anymore. And we actually don't respect you anymore. And so they don't show them respect, at least. In my case, it's been completely different. They've kept me involved in the process. They've let me come up last week and speak to the whole cast and talk to them about what I had in mind as I was writing the book and the history of the writing of the book. And it just made them more a part of the whole world of Big Fish. And that doesn't always happen. And I know, and I may have mentioned this to you once before, a writer whose book was being turned into a movie, and the screenwriter wrote a script for it, and the novelist read the script and didn't like it, and they got on the phone and talked, and the scriptwriter said, the problem here is that you don't understand your book.
You don't understand the book as I see it and as I'm going to deal with it. And you've got a sort of a different approach. I mean, could you have dealt with that if mm-hmm. I mean, could you have worked your or would you just had to throw up your hands and say, well, I give up on this. I'll just sit back and
they're choices that you make. I mean, I think of these things as being adventures, and some adventures, you know, they're good for a while. You get a flat tire, you run out of gas, you know, you're in the middle of nowhere for a night. But this adventure has been really good so far. I'm a writer. I write books. That's what I've always wanted to do. I've never wanted to have a movie made or a musical made. That's never been my ambition.
You didn't write the book to be made into
a
movie.
Right. So everything that happens outside of that is something that you do when everything else is done. You know, you've got a Saturday night free, you go out and party, and that's what this is to me. It is more than anything, and this I don't know how this comes off sounding, but it's advertising for my book. You know, it's the best advertising that you can
get.
When
the movie came along, the book sale, if you didn't have a participation in the financial part of the movie, you're gaining financially and reputationally by the sale of the books.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. A book generally doesn't get a lot of marketing behind it unless it's a big bestseller on its own. So when a movie comes out, all this advertising goes out there, and some people, not all people, unfortunately, but some people realize that there's a book out there behind it and go out and buy it.
Well, I'm visiting with Daniel Wallace. We're talking not only about his best-selling book, Big Fish, but we're talking about the movie, a little bit about the movie that came along and forth that's been very popular, and now it's going to Broadway. Mm-hmm. You're not the first to know, but you're pretty close to the first to know. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and my guest is Daniel Wallace. We're talking about Big Fish, the musical, not the movie, not the book. Well, could talk about the book, the movie, and the musical? And first of all, how, as best you can tell from watching the rehearsals, what does the musical have to leave out and add to the movie version of mm-hmm. The related question, if you want to bring it in, is the musical based on the movie or the book?
Mm-hmm. The musical is based on both. It would seem logical that you have the book turn into the movie, and then the movie being a visual medium would just translate to the stage. But the things that you'll see on stage are not going to be just a rehash of the of the scenes that you saw in the movie. They're completely different. There's a lot of stuff that you can
completely
do on a stage.
Different.
Completely
so
different.
We're not gonna take that trip along. We're not gonna go into the village.
No, there are characters that are the same. There are some of the songs that you'll hear will be reminiscent of both the movie and the book. I mean, a father singing to a son about, you know, not being able to know him, or being, you know, singing about these great stories and that sort of thing. But the actual visual extravaganza is going to be completely different. And that's the thing about the adaptation process, is the movie wasn't the same as the book. And if the Broadway show were the same as the movie, it would be really lifeless.
What are the constants?
Well, the constants are the spiritual underpinnings of the book, which is the relationship between a father and a son, and two people trying to get to know each other before one of them dies. I mean, that is really, when it's boiled down to it, that's what it is. And it's about getting to know somebody who is impossible to know. And I think that's the struggle that kids have with parents and have always had with parents.
But some of us were enchanted by the fairy tale aspects of it. We liked the relationship part of it's important, but we love the stories.
Absolutely. And see, that's the gloss that that you can play with when you're making these different versions of it. That's the thing, is that you can take these amazing stories and just, you don't have to be religiously adherent to the stories that were in the book, for instance. In the movie, what he did is he took a lot of the stories in the book and did a little bit of one here and a little bit of another there and sort of mixed them up, and that's the same thing that happens in...
So they get remixed. So there'll be three different versions of the same essential story.
Exactly.
And how do the writers for the musical... Mm-hmm. What relationship do they have with the writers of the movie? Mm-hmm. Are they the same? Are they some of the same people?
Yeah. The producers of the musical, Dan Jinks and Bruce Cohen, are the same people who produced the movie. Bruce Cohen just won an Oscar. He produced Silver Linings Playbook. So they're going into the musical world now. They're producing it. John August, who wrote the screenplay for the movie, is writing the book for the musical. Andrew Lippa is writing the songs. He had his last show on Broadway was The Addams Family, which he did. So there are those constants, and they're really important. The producers and the screenwriter are the constants that, they've been living with this story for longer than I've known Laura. It's crazy. Since 1998 or 9.
Since you all signed a movie deal.
Yeah, so it's been a part of our collective lives for a long time.
Can we talk? I just love to talk about money.
Okay, where is it? I don't see any here.
No, but you're a young author. To get your book published, you sign anything. Mm-hmm. You'd sign anything with your agent. Mm-hmm. You sign anything with the publisher. Yeah.
That's why I lost this ear.
And so, my guess is that you signed away all your movie rights, your international rights, your musical rights. I'll give you that for anything so that you're not making much money off of this.
Well, again, no. That's why writers have agents. If it had been up to me, I probably would have said, sure, I'll walk your dog if you publish my book. But writers should always have agents, because agents are smarter and they know, they can look ahead to possibilities that don't exist. That's what contracts, do. Everybody's looking as far ahead as they possibly can to see how much they can get off of anything that possibly could happen. So nobody would think that this would ever be turned into a musical.
It's covered. It was covered.
It was covered, yeah. And the movie was covered. This was covered. So, you don't know. Obviously, you have daydreams about what could happen if it were a success. And if it were a success, then it would be, lucrative, but it's not guaranteed. I hope that it runs for 10 years.
And goes all over, and goes to London, and goes all over the world, and keeps on going, and then high schools produce
absolutely.
It for hope for that. But is all that covered in your original contract with the publisher, or do you have to renegotiate these as every opportunity arises? And do the producers of the movie and now the musical have the opportunity to say, "Well, we don't really need you all that
well,
much."
Well, they don't need me. You know, they don't need me at all because I don't do anything with it. I don't write it or suggest changes or anything like that. So they don't need me. They only needed my book. And so there are underlying rights, which I still hold. So in order for them to do the musical, they have to give me a percentage of whatever money that they make in order to do it. So,
so it's in
not
your
a lot,
interest,
but, yeah.
but it is, it remains in your interest to be happy and to promote and to be partners with them and their interest, financial interest, though it may be smaller, to keep you happy so that the whole family comes across as
absolutely.
Supportive and...
Yeah. Yeah, they have me worked in with, you know, all the publicity and just the whole world of the project. It's not... I'm not on the outside looking in at all.
Now, I want you just to do something which is unfair, but I bet you'll do it. And that is...
Sing?
Yes. I want you to sing the song. Give me some music from the musical.
No.
They won't do that. All right. Will you... for those few people in Chapel Hill who don't know the framework of the story of Big Fish, and you've got your elevator speech about the book practiced for more than 15 years. Tell us the story... short version of Big Fish.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a story about a father who's dying and the son who's trying to get to know him before he does. The father's always been a spinner of great fish stories, tales larger than life, literally larger than life in a lot of cases. Very charming and a raconteur. And the son wants to see who he really is before he dies. Like, who is this guy? What's real? What do you really believe in? But all the father can do is tell the day he met the giant, the day the mermaid saved his life, and
the diamond, the jewels,
everything except what seems really real. Like the son says, "I don't even know if you believe in God. I have no idea." And so through the process of the book and through these stories that the father is telling, which are fantastic and mythic, reminiscence in some cases of Paul Bunyan and that sort of thing, the son is trying to chisel through that in order to get to the heart of this man he loves, but who won't be here for very much longer.
Well, it's a beautiful retelling of your version of the story. And so interesting because if you asked me to tell the story, I would say, I'd want to tell you about the time that the fish spit up the, either from the movie or from the book, I wanted to tell the tales.
Yeah.
These are you're like Grimm in the fairy tales that come out of this dad's mouth. But when you retell your version of the story, you don't even get to the specifics of the tales.
Well, the thing is that's the... there are a lot of tales, and my elevator pitch, has to, get to the heart of what the story is about, and everything else is dressing around it. I'm not a raconteur like you are, DG, I can't sell it, I'm in there just typing away in my little room.
We're visiting with Daniel Wallace. We're talking about The Big Fish, and we're talking about the movie, but the book, and and the excitement that surrounds the upcoming Broadway production of Big Fish the Musical. Daniel Wallace and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is DG Martin. Daniel Wallace and I are talking about Big Fish, which is on my mind because I just learned that Big Fish, the musical, is already scheduled for Broadway opening at the end of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And will be open, I guess not in preview, but in the pre-Broadway run in Chicago.
Right. Yeah, where they're practicing it.
Now, by the... it would be next month, in April.
In April, tickets are on sale.
So we could go to Chicago and see it.
Yeah.
I know you and Laura are going up
Right.
Who gets to go on? Who gets to get on the jet plane that you have leased to go to Chicago?
Well, a lot of people. It's a huge. It's a Boeing 7007.
It's a seven, whatever it is, seven. If it can get the battery fixed.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's very dangerous. You know, we're going up there. There's a thing called Press Night, and it's the 19th. The thing opens on the 5th.
Wait, it's the 19th?
Of April.
April is Press Night. So that'll be 2 weeks after it's been.
So we're not going to see it until then. And, you know, anybody can go. You know, it's not a.
So if we can buy tickets on.
Yeah,
we can
go online and buy a ticket. I can't pay for your trip up there, though.
You will pay for the. Did you mean to say that you would pay for the ticket?
I would pay for nothing.
Okay, right, just to be clear.
Absolutely nothing. Just to be clear. So it's, you know, yeah, it's
but you open. Could get me maybe better. You might could get me better seats. Mike.
There are people for whom I can get better seats.
Yeah.
Are you one of them?
Well,
we'll see. Possibly. Yeah, we'll talk. The one interesting part of this, we've been watching actual rehearsals have started, but over the course of the last 18 months or so, they've been working on it and trying out different people for different roles. And so Laura and I have seen it in the whole thing, or the whole thing in whatever stage it's been in at that time, being sung at these little studios in New York. And each time they have a different guy come out to practice, to do the lead. For the show. And the first time we went to see it, it was in, you know, just in this little scrubby little room and a bunch of chairs where you could sit. And on the chairs, there was a list of the names of all the people that were doing
Were they still trying out?
They were still trying out. This is a year and a half.
Okay.
This is before that anybody had been named to the final cast. So they would have, but they had the names of all the actors that were going to be in the show on the chair, just typed up. And I don't know anything about Broadway, but I was looking at the names, and I said, "Look at this guy's name. This is so sad. He has got the same name as Hugh Jackman, and he's got to change it because there's no way that he's going to become, you know, a star with having the same name as somebody who's already famous." And the door opens. Comes in. Hugh Jackman comes in singing the role. It was amazing.
But he didn't make the cut.
No, he didn't.
You're kidding me now.
You know what? He's a movie star. You know, and he had movies to do.
Well, it didn't work out. Surely they didn't say
he was amazing. Yeah, he was amazing. But you know what? I never thought that there would be somebody that'd be better than him. And Norbert Leo Butz is better.
Tell us about him.
He is 2-time Tony winner. He has been on Broadway for a number of years, and has I think he originated some roles in The Wiz. I think he's been in The Producers. But
and what role is he going to play?
He is going to play in Big Fish. He's playing the young father and the old father. So what if you think back to the movie? You had Albert Finney and Ewan McGregor playing that same role, young and old. In the musical, he does both, and that's one of the things they can do live with sets. You can see and understand through the lighting, through the stage direction, all that, where he is and in his life. So he's doing both.
Now, you mentioned Hugh Jackman as someone who was interested in the part. And we know he can sing and act and do this. And so this guy's Broadway, and we'll be singing.
He'll be singing.
And what kinds of things will he be singing? What kind of songs what?
They're all kinds, you know. It's really contemporary Broadway musical stuff.
It's new music then. It's not going back to the times to get, to 50 years ago or 70.
No. They're all, are they all new songs?
They're all new songs, and I can't frame the question, so help me, but it's, are the songs going to remind us of current day times in music, or is it going to take us back in time to where?
I understand what you mean. Yeah, there are a lot of songs in there that are pure Broadway that will connect you to older shows, and it's not, for instance, a rock musical or, you know, a country western musical. I mean, it is songs that are written in the Broadway tradition. So it is sort of timeless in that respect.
And they're new. They're not.
They're all new songs. Yeah. And there is a song. You can hear one of the songs if you go on YouTube and do a search for Big Fish, the musical. You can find a song. It's just of the two leads, Norbert Leo Butz and Kate Baldwin, singing one of the songs from the musical. It's really nice.
So go to YouTube and type in Big Fish, and
musical,
maybe you'll get
musical,
Big Fish musical, and you might be able
to find
hear
it,
hear that. Well, now, a few days ago we heard a wonderful woman talk about songwriting, an author and a poet, and then gave an illustration of how she and a collaborator wrote the song, and she didn't think she was a songwriter. Did any of this make you want to make you be a songwriter? Or are you a songwriter? And can you do better than they did?
I can, DC.
I do.
If I had this musical, I've always played music. I grew up playing guitar and banjo and that sort of thing, and have written some songs. But no, this is the one of the great joys out of being part of this is being able to watch everybody else do all the hard work and me just sit back and take it all in and love it. I have nothing at stake here except my own joy. And I'm going to be happy no matter what.
As a writer, everything you do, wherever you go, you're picking up tips and learning lessons and getting ideas, most of which don't work, but every now and then one comes up. And are there lessons learned in this experience, or is this just for fun and just to celebrate the success of the book?
Well, lessons as an artist, there are always things that you learn when you watch somebody tell a story. And that's what this is about, the movie or the musical. It's all about storytelling. And so if you can't tell the story, no matter how good the songs are, it's not going to work. People have to be moved. And so everything that I do, everything that I see, everything I read, unfortunately, it's hard for me to enjoy it just as it is because I'm always looking at how they did what
trying to learn from it. Yeah, I'm thinking this too. Here's the storyteller. He's a storyteller in a tradition of writing, and he teaches this stuff. And it's not doctrinal, but there are walls that are built around how writers of fiction learn to write. And so you break away from that and you go to places where there's another guy who's writing similar stories, but he's doing it for the movie. Mm-hmm. So you learn, you see how it's different and you say, well, maybe we could try something like that in writing. Or you go to watch a Broadway musical being produced, stories told in a different way, and you say, well, I like that. Maybe I can, or am I just dreaming about that?
Absolutely not. I feel like that this day and age is unique in that media is becoming all mixed up, all mashed up. And we've always thought of, for instance, the story as being purely text. And it's really not that anymore. And so why can't you have a short story, a fictional short story, that has pictures in it? Why can't you have a soundtrack to a story? I really encourage my students to think in those terms because, this isn't the, 19th century. You can do so much more and there's no reason to feel like that you're beholden to everything that's happened in the past. So these are, seeing the story evolve in the way that it has really does encourage me and makes me more eager to explore these different avenues of expression.
We're visiting with Daniel Wallace. We're talking about Big Fish. Now we're talking about Big Fish, the musical. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is DG Martin, and I'm visiting with Daniel Wallace, and we're talking about Big Fish, the musical. Big Fish the Musical scheduled to open its pre-Broadway run in Chicago in April and then go to Broadway and scheduled to open in the Neil Simon Theater on
the 5th of September.
On the 5th of September.
Yeah.
And I'm still shaken with excitement so much from learning this news that I'm having a hard time interviewing Daniel Wallace. He's rescuing me by telling me all kinds of interesting things that are happening along with this, along with the development of the musical. The one thing that he hasn't done, I really want to hear the music. Mm-hmm. What have you learned about how you write a song mm-hmm. for a musical? Not that you can do it, and not that you really know, but I mean, but you've watched this develop. Mm-hmm. You've heard the songs yeah. develop. And is it just that we have the notion that people who are talented songwriters, after a party, they've had a little bit too much to drink, they go to the piano, and it just comes up, and they got an idea, and then they yeah. build on that idea, and there's a song.
I think with this, what I've learned, since I am so familiar with the story, you know, obviously having written it and seen the transitional stages that it's gone through, I'm very familiar with what's going on, what the themes are, what the ideas are, and what, as a writer, for instance, I want the reader to come away with. There's always this sense of when I write something, I want to know how I want the reader to feel after they read it. Mm-hmm. And that's what rewriting is about. You rewrite it until you get to that point where you're going to be able to create that feeling in the reader. It's not about me feeling anything. It's about you. And the musical does that same thing, and it just has this extra wonderful component of song. And you can really be directive with song. You can... It's hard to make somebody sad when you're writing. I mean, you do it, obviously. People do it all the time, but it takes a lot of work. But you can generate that emotion really quickly with
if you've got,
a chord.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's something yeah. that registers in your soul yeah. that comes from the...
Yeah. Imagine, you know, I mean, music is what all art aspires to. You know, you want to be able to create and... a person's mind and heart, the same emotions that they feel when they listen to music. Because music is the ultimate shortcut. You know, it goes right to your heart. I mean, doesn't go through your brain, and it just, you start to feel. I mean, you know, there are chords that people can start to play, and I immediately start to tear up.
Right. I don't want to admit that. Yeah,
but, you know, that's why AT&T commercials are so good. They know which notes to play.
Well, and so this is happening with Big Fish.
Yeah, you know, they're able to shortcut and get to that place, that emotion with a song, that it takes a lot longer to do in a book. And it's not, I'm not trying to suggest that it's easy, but it works.
I hear you saying it. I'm a writer. This is what I hear you saying. I'm a writer, and I try to make people say it, or I try to... make the readers have experiences that I'm mm-hmm. trying to lead them to, sad, happy, fun, mm-hmm. adventure. But if I had that little extra vehicle of the music to go along with it, it just makes my task a lot easier to fiddle with someone's emotions.
Well, you know, it's all art, storytelling, it's all very sensory, you know, and it's all about... hearing, smelling, touching. You know, you can't touch, you know, in a book, they're just words, but what you're encouraging the reader is make them feel as if they were touching something, seeing something, smelling something. And so in a musical, you introduce a new way of feeling that you don't have in a book. So it's a layered experience. You get to see people moving, touching, and talking, and then you get that extra added song, which takes it to that next level that text can't by itself.
Wow.
So it's all of these things exist, I think, on their own, and can only be successful if the stories are adapted so that they're appropriate for their own genre. And that's why I think the story has been successful, is not that the book was necessarily that good, but as a book, it was okay. It was good. But the movie, as a movie, took what the book offered and changed it. And that's what the musical is like, too. It's going to take a lot of the good from each of those different things and put it to better use.
We're talking with Daniel Wallace about the his classic book, Big Fish, and now it's been a movie. Pretty good reaction to the movie, mm-hmm. and now a Broadway musical coming up, and we're among the first to hear about it. But there's other news in your life, and as I mentioned to you just when we saw each other the other day, I thought of you when I was sort of semi-marooned on Portsmouth Island, which is or Portsmouth Village, which is a deserted village down south of Ocracoke, where there's a post office, a school, mm-hmm. you know, a store, lots of little houses, and the village looks just fine, except there's nobody there. And so it took me back to your upcoming book. You want to tell us just in a minute or two about your
absolutely.
About your new
book? Yeah, it's really exciting. And in May, I have a new novel coming out, and it's called The Kings and Queens of Rome. And Rome is spelled R-O-A-M. That's the name of the town where everything takes place. And it is a Grimm's fairy tale for adults. It's about two sisters who live in a mythical town in a mythical time. And the sometimes difficult and treacherous lives they lead. There's a kind of a Grimm's fairy tale darkness to it. And when you think back to those tales like the Hansel and Gretel, you know, it's very dark. You know, there are these dark sides to them, and that's what I've tried to do in this book. And it's a story that the first time that I've written a book, which I think everything exists within it. That is the characters, the time, the place. It's a world in and of itself, and with attachments to nothing outside of it. And I think it's a story that I love because you can live inside of it for a few hundred pages, and then when you come up for air, see where you've been.
Yeah, well, you take us on a wild ride in terms of imagination, but as I've told you before, notwithstanding your effort to take me into a little world and leave me, I keep finding things in the story that remind me of my world. I mean, there is the equivalent of a deserted textile town, the mythic person who starts the mill and then, you know, becomes the center of the town, the boss of the, you know, Mr. Cannon at Cannon Mills and all of this. Evokes those kinds of mm-hmm. memories. And then in your scenery, you take me to the mountains. I think, I'm you know, for me, mountains of North Carolina, it's just like what I know. And then you say, yeah, but it's not. This is just my Grimm's fairy tale.
Right. Well, there's no story that's going to exist happily, you know, without it being tethered to the real world. And there's no story that you can write that isn't created through and influenced by the world. So while the story, the world that the story tells in this book is unique and it has never existed, never will exist. There are parallels in it that are clearly taken from the experience that we've had and that we know about. So
yeah, even the mythic tales and even mythic tales and Big Fish were set in recognizable, if exaggerated.
Absolutely, in the relationships in them. There's nothing, no matter how fantastic something becomes, that is not to some degree drawn from our own experience.
Well, Daniel Wallace, thanks for telling us about the news about the upcoming Broadway production of Big Fish, the musical, and giving us a heads up about your upcoming new book,
thanks.
The Kings and Queens of Rome.
Yeah.
Thanks to Daniel Wallace. Thanks to you for listening. And this is D.G. Martin with Who's Talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.